Good morning, everybody. It is May 8th, 2020. The time is 10 a.m., and hereby call to order the meeting of the Story County Board of Supervisors. We are originating our conference call from the administration building, and public access is being provided via conference call. We also have a text number on our agenda. If anybody's called in and doesn't have the text number, in case you want to make a public comment or another comment, it's 515-451-7293. We ask, okay, we just had about a 10th or 11th caller come on, and we again have the knocking noise that we've had. So I'm going to have to mute people, and if you need to unmute yourself to talk, please use first unmute your phone set and then do *6. And if you can't unmute your phone set, please text at 451-7293 and I'll unmute everybody and we'll have to deal with the knocking noise. So here goes. I am now going to mute everybody so that we can hear ourselves. Sorry about this. Except it didn't mute. Barb, is mute *5?
Yes, it is.
Didn't mute.
Just press the mute button and see if that works.
No. The mute button mutes this, not everybody else. It's not muting. Barb, I'm going to need some assistance.
Yes, I'm on the way up.
Everybody be patient, please. We'll get the meeting started in a little bit once we troubleshoot the phone. Hello? Okay, I'm going to turn the volume down a little bit from this end because that helps the clicking be less loud for us. I apologize if that means that you're going to have a hard time hearing, but we will try to speak loudly, okay?
I just want to pick up the recording.
So. I know, but when I move the microphone closer, it gets louder.
Oh.
Okay. Let me see what I can do. Okay, the meeting is called to order. It's now 10:06, and we'll get into the agenda. First, I would entertain a motion to adopt the agenda.
So moved. Second.
Hedden?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Merkin? Aye. Agenda's adopted. Okay, now there's a statement explaining why meeting in person is impossible or impractical for Code Section 21.8.1, and that is because of the COVID-19 pandemic and the precautions that we are taking, specifically no more than 10 people in a meeting. Therefore, we're doing public access pursuant to the Iowa Code via the conference call. I don't think we have any agenda items that were given to us on less than 24 hours notice, which would be an emergency agenda item, and the agenda was posted in 24 hours ahead of time. Next, we'll go to updates on COVID-19. Are there any staff updates at this point?
You might have to remind them to unmute.
Unmute if you do have an update. Thank you. Okay, it doesn't seem like anybody does, so I'll go on to supervisor, and I'm going to start with this one. We received an email this morning from State Senator Herman Kornbach. It was to us and to the Board of Health, asking if there were anything, is there anything that the Board of Health or the supervisors can do to help Story County residents be safe from the pandemic, in addition to what the governor has done. We have received advice from Ethan Anderson of the county attorney's office, and the legal authority is really rests with the governor and her proclamation. Ethan, do you want to say anything more? It's a lot more, there's a lot more complexity to it than that, but what it basically comes down to is the governor is proclaiming certain things. The governor said that things may open. IDCH has set guidelines for restaurants to open. And my understanding of it is that local authorities, unless the governor allows them to, cannot set any other guidelines.
That's right.
Okay.
And that, Madam Chair, that seemed to be the information that we received from Heather Adams from the AG's office as well. And I did provide the information from our legal to the Board of Health and stuff, and talked with Dr. Passion. My understanding is that he will be responding to the senator this afternoon when time allows, because he is seeing patients this morning.
Okay, good.
I'd like to make a comment also.
Certainly.
This is Supervisor Olson. And in looking through Senator Kornbach's arguments, I understand what he's actually putting forth some legal principles, I think, as I look at Ethan and Nadi. But here's where I haven't responded to him at all, other than thank you, but here's where I come down on this when it really hits bottom. Even if there were, if Senator Kornbach's, some of his arguments were able to be, you know, legal, it costs money to challenge the state. So from an asset standpoint on our point, if we don't feel that we want to do that, we have advice from our legal counsel that, the AG's opinion is pretty clear. So we'd be taking on the Attorney General of the State of Iowa on this. I just like to make note of that. I mean, we have the ability to do what we want to do, but the cost, the time to do that effectively, and certainly then there's the enforcement cost too. So thank you for letting me weigh in on that.
And I would also say that I certainly share Senator Kornbach's frustration. Looking at the statistics as we have been, it took Story County 31 days to get to 26 COVID new positive cases. It took us 9 days to get to 52. We doubled in 9 days. Senator Kornbach also sent some information, a study that was done by the Iowa Public Policy Council, Peter Fisher, and was looking at Story Boone and about four other counties that are border counties with my numbers, some of which have meat packing plants, but some of which are Story County and Boone County. And noticing that all of those kind of second-tier counties are having big increases. And I've heard anecdotally about people coming from other counties to Story County businesses because we're open and their counties don't have anything open. That concerns me in this time. So I certainly understand Senator Kornbach's frustration. I do, there's one other thing. I think that even if we did have the authority right now, I agree, it's questionable. You know, the attorneys are saying, no, we don't. I can understand that. Even if we did have the authority, the governor's been moving quickly. There have been a lot of changes. I would be concerned if we were going to put local precautions or guidance or regulations, let's say, on top of that people would get even more confused. And that's what I'm concerned about right now, is people are confused. What can be open, what can't be open, what can I do, what can't I do? And I think it's better we, even if we could, not ask for that right now as much as I would like to. So I'm not going to make a motion that we do anything. It's not really on the agenda, it's really an update, but I'm not going to put anything on the agenda myself.
No, I think one of the most things we can do is to continue to reiterate the need to social distance and wear a mask as much as possible. It's, to me, from what our attorney has provided us and what the AG's office is relatively clear of what you can and cannot do, especially since the governor has stated a state of an emergency and the authority that she has because of that, and which kind of overrides the local authority.
Exactly. Somebody said to me, recently about something else with this. We all got to stay in our own lane. So. Okay, anything else on that? And what we're doing within our control. I think we're doing a very good job of looking at all of these issues in terms of county government and union employer interests. So I think that's where we need to focus. And we're doing, I think everybody's doing a good job of that, staff and board. So.
I do have another update that I thought would be of interest for everybody, especially headed into the weekend with weekend activities. The executive committee of the AEDC met this morning via Zoom, and one of the topics that came up is that the chamber at AEDC last week had a meeting with the members that have restaurants. And there was a decision made there, no formal group, but there was a decision made that they'd like to try and come up with some uniform marketing and uniform outreach and message to the public. So they came up with a list of their expectations on them, meaning the people serving the food in the restaurants, and also their expectations they would like from their patrons. And the chamber printed up 100 copies of those for posting in the member restaurants. Those have all gone out now. And in addition, the chamber / AAD staff, DC staff, is going to reach out to restaurants that, even if they aren't a member of one of the chamber affiliates, to try and see if they'd like those posters too, just in an effort to try and have a uniform, back to the avoid confusion. This is totally a voluntary program, but if you, I would urge that if you see a sign posted from like that, when you're in, if you go to a restaurant, I'm not advising that, but if you see it, maybe thank the management for at least trying to do something to communicate.
Thank you.
Well,
is that on our website, you know?
Not yet. We just heard this morning, so I have on my list of to-dos is can you send it or, you know, is it on the website? So then I'll pass that along to everybody.
Thank you. Good to hear. Next, we'll go to an update on the COVID-19 impact on county revenues.
Director
Ted Rasmussen is here. Thank you.
Good morning.
Good morning, Ted. Okay, so the governor's proclamation in March suspended all April interest for property taxes, which is the late, you can call it late penalty. It's a 1.5% interest charge to the total outstanding. With that change, it was to help individuals negatively financially impacted by the COVID-19 virus and to not kind of add an extra burden of the interest fee for April. At that time, that was only for taxes due in March. She has since updated her proclamation to include all of the various property tax impacts to include late September payments, outstanding tax sales, and other issues. Everything was suspended for the month of May. So, with that said, residents still do not have to pay any property taxes until May 27th. Before they will incur any late penalty interest.
Late September payments, outstanding tax sales, and what?
All other things are put in a suspended state.
Mm-hmm.
So property deeds, if a tax sale made its property deed, those are suspended. Everything has been put into the suspended state. We are allowed to take subsequent payments from those tax sale deed holders, or tax sale holders, tax sale certificate holders. Right now, that leaves us with 2% of our total property taxes outstanding. That's $3,086 as of yesterday at the end of day.
$3,086,000.
Of which approximately $700,000 would come back to Story County as a government entity. The remaining $2.3 million would be spread amongst our schools, cities, and other action quarters. The numbers are significantly higher than previous years. Typically on May 1, we still have around $500,000 outstanding.
Is it close to the $3 million?
Somebody just put us on hold. I guess music is better than that.
Yeah.
Oh, well,
excuse me, Seth, if somebody just put their phone on hold and then took it off, you seem to be the person who's probably the knocking.
No, somebody said
no,
no,
was
it wasn't. No,
no, that was that. Well, music is knocking.
And usually, I said that incorrect. Usually we have about between $750,000 and $1 million in May. And we usually collect between $500,000 and $600,000 in May. And then between the June 1st and the June tax sale, we typically collect around another $100,000. So the last few years, the tax sale here has been approximately $250,000. Been as low as $225,000 and as high as $300,000, but $250,000 is the general number. With the tax sale currently suspended, there's really not as much to compel people to pay their property taxes now. Of that $3 million outstanding, it's tough to tell if those are folks that have been negatively impacted by COVID-19 and cannot pay, if those are folks that were in a position prior to COVID-19 that made it difficult for them to pay. It could be people who have the funds to pay but aren't interested in paying until they are compelled to. And we are worried it could be people who have forgotten to pay, because they knew they didn't have to pay March 31st, so they forgot. And then the absolute worst case scenario is it could be people confused that the governor's proclamation actually waived all property taxes, not just the late entry. So what we are going to do is typically we are required by law to send out a notice on May 1 that your property taxes are delinquent if you do not pay them before the third Monday of June, they will be taken to a tax sale. With the government's proclamation, those notices were suspended, with the tax sale being suspended. We are considering, typically in the office, we send out a notice about the 6th or 7th of April, once we've collected all taxes post-month in March, to kind of remind people that taxes are due, just kind of out of courtesy. So we have it in our budget to send those notices. We intend to send a reminder and explanation notice, just kind of a reminder to folks that property taxes were not waived completely, just the interest. They are still due. Currently they're due May 28th, pending any other actions by the governor. So we hope that the sending of that notice early next week, we'll see more movement on the property taxes. But right now, we still do have $700,000 outstanding that Story County is to receive. And without any real guidance or indication on when the tax sale will be held, we aren't sure when that all will come in. Right now, the governor has the option to suspend the tax sale completely until 2021, or do it at a later date. There is precedent for it being done at a later date when the Cedar Rapids flood happened, so hopefully in 2008. They waited until December of 2008 to do the tax sale, and they conducted it then. We could see something along those lines where an access could be completed later in the summer, in the fall, or wait to do it. So there is a concern. We do have another source of revenue with the registration renewals that we receive. Registration renewal penalties and due dates have also been suspended. And title. Typically, a customer has 30 days to present a new title to the county. Those dates have been suspended as well. So, in looking at our motor vehicle numbers, our total revenue in March was pretty much on track for a normal March. However, our revenue in April was down from $62,000 to $52,000, so we lost about $10,000 in revenue in April. And the last few weeks, our title work has been trending at about half. Our registrations have picked up to about the normal rate. And we are working with the DOT to figure out how exactly late fees will be assessed on the 28th of November's proclamation project. There's a little bit of confusion whether everyone will still have 30 days after that, or if the proclamation went into effect, if they still have 15 days, do they only have 15 days once it resets? So, there are a lot of complicating factors when you start incurring penalties on time basis. But motor vehicle does seem to be picking up, and again, those registrations are not going to be waived, so we should get that revenue. It just depends on timing of when people want to say that. The last thing I wanted to make you aware of is currently the 5-year bond treasury rate is at 0.75%. which is a pretty low number. Our income off of investment revenue is going to be down next year, but I think we have it at $400,000 in our final budget. It's definitely going to be down until we can kind of get a better idea of how long this is going to last. We can't really predict how much it's down. Hopefully it won't be completely wiped out, but it could definitely be cut in half.
What's the total on that?
The revenue? I believe we had it at $400,000 for fiscal year 21.
For investment
income.
So it's $200,000.
Yeah.
And I know it's early, but I can't see it.
The biggest hit where we've seen on that is we have a lot of daily income off interest in our bank that are just our cash funds, and all of those have gone upstream. I think we're getting 23% on that. So that's a big cut into, we're moving a lot of money usually in. We try to invest what we can, but a lot of it is in that market account that we have to have available. So that's going to be the bigger impact than even the typical CD and bond rate, which is not really.
So as we go into fiscal 21, I'm just wondering, might it make sense for you to do maybe a simple little spreadsheet to report to supervisors to kind of show here's what the budget was, here's what my projections are for the year right now, for those three or four items, and then maybe update that so we could kind of keep up.
For just the investments or including the taxes?
I did all of it. Mm-hmm. All of it. And I did have a question. You asked me on that this was significantly higher. I think you're talking about 3.08, which is going to be significantly higher than previous years.
Yeah.
And what is the number for previous, like last year?
Usually it's under $1 million.
as of May 1. We're usually well under a million by May 1.
So we're at least 3 times as high in what we can have, but we don't know what's going to come in. That's a new variable.
And at this time, a reminder is, you know, people get their property tax statement of August of the previous year. People know that they're due in March, but it is easy to forget. By this time, in most years, we've sent an April 6th, 7th notice and the May 1st notice that's required by law. So typically, people that have two extra kind of reminders or benefits that didn't take place this year. With the April 1, we never did that because technically the penalty hadn't started yet, and we didn't want to send those notices
right.
out not knowing how much they would actually owe.
Sure.
Have somebody send us in a payment and have it not be correct mm-hmm. because of the governor's.
So we'll wait on the governor, but you're going to send your reminder after.
We're going to try to send a reminder next week with what the penalty waived thus far would be for outstanding taxes and get those out with a notice at the bottom that, you know, this is not enforcing any penalty. This is a reminder that they were not waived. It's more kind of a courtesy reminder than anything else. And then this is what you owe now. Pending any changes May 28th, if you have questions, call our office.
Is that a lot of people to send to, or is it just part of, I was just wondering how many actual property types pay for?
We didn't look up how many that is, how many actual letters.
So you might want to be sending a second letter later that says the governor's now, you know, lifted up, so we need to pay by bond.
Well, our second letter, once the governor lifts the proclamation, it looks like we will have a tax sale at some point. We are required to send a letter, I believe it's 75, no, not, I think it's 45 days prior to the tax sale, or 40 days. Approximately 40 days you're required by law to send that letter to notify them that it's going to be published in the newspaper and go to tax sale. So that... We've always had that budgeted, and that will go out once we have a date on the tax sale for sure. This is just our normal April notice that we never sent out that we're now going to send out to just hopefully remind people. And we do still have taxes coming in. It's just they're not coming in very quickly.
Ted, I have a request or suggestion that when you do compile that list that Linda had kind of indicated, you know, where the update is, if it's possible for you or your staff to break down in the outstanding taxes due, kind of how much of it is commercial, how much of it is residential. Again, I'll go back to the ABC this morning. One of the comments made or that was discussed is that one of the things that's happening with the COVID-19 is that some companies that have had a lot of their people working from remote, especially if they're tech companies, et cetera, they're getting feedback from their employees that they can continue to do that. They want to continue to do that, okay? And so at least we're aware of one company at the ISU Business Park who is not renewing their lease. That is also a concern with retailers, that people who are shopping online, who would have stopped brick and mortar and now are being forced to shop online, they're concerned that a lot of those shoppers will not return to brick and mortar stores, which can impact. So I'd be interested to see how many of these are commercial accounts or multi-residential, because that's the other thing that the landlords are getting nervous about with ISU. They're predicting, you know, at least a 5% drop in enrollment at ISU now. And so those are all things that will impact maybe how high our delinquencies on taxes are. If the revenue is not headed into some of those landlords, they're not going to be able to pay them. Thank you.
This is really helpful.
Did
you have any
questions?
No.
Yeah,
I really did all the information, yeah.
And you'll probably be updating us regularly.
Yeah.
And we appreciate it.
Yeah, I don't see any big updates coming until we get closer to the proclamation date and see if it's extended again or not.
Right.
So,
Thank you. Okay, now we will head on to discussion and consideration of items brought before the board with requests for immediate action. And I don't think we have any that aren't on the agenda, so next we'll go to discussion and consideration of asset joint funder priorities. 17 and Carla Webb, and Sandra is here in the public meeting room. Carla, are you on the phone?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Thank you, Carla.
You're welcome. I'll go ahead and start off, and then Sandra can share any other thoughts that she might have on the joint funder information. So in May of 2019, the asset funders met to discuss funder expectations and vision for assets. From that meeting, the five themes that are listed in the memo before you, those five themes rose to the top. Since that meeting, staff have been involved with collecting data and information for the 2020 community needs assessment, and we also worked with outcome information from the CLEAR Impact Scorecard during the FY 2021 funding allocation process. A joint funders meeting is scheduled for next week for Wednesday, May 13th, where the intent is to continue the conversation regarding shared funder priorities. An exercise staff has suggested for each funder to look at is to look at where their current funding priorities would align within the current asset service categories of education, income, and health. So the memo that you have identifies the county's current FY 20 and 21 priorities and then identifies how the priorities may fit in the service categories of education, income, and health. I won't walk through each of those areas unless you would like me to. Otherwise, I thought if you had any thoughts or questions on that, we could walk through those at this time.
This is Laura. So how about if I start? Because I did make a couple of notes. Under the priorities, the chart that you provided, which is very nice and helpful, under county service priorities, we've got listed both social and educational development and opportunities, and then education and awareness. And of those two, the one that I think might need to be, have a serious look at is the education and awareness part. Because as all the asset funders are looking at maybe narrowing their focus or not being able to let funds go so far, I would suggest that be one area to take a look at. Now, education and awareness is very broad in itself, okay? And maybe that's one area we can narrow it down, especially when you take a look at the discussion topics above, to talk about maybe needs assessments or how many people are being served. I'm just pointing out that maybe some of the education and awareness programming might be somewhere to go and might affect fewer people. But it depends where it's funded. I have the asset book here, and yes, I have the right one, 2021 this time, okay. But when you go through and you see the variety that fits under education awareness, I'm just urging that it be really looked at and yes. Then down under the asset service category of health, the second item or the second service priority for the county is access to emergency services. And I would once again ask that we take a look at that. And the reason I ask that is that has the expansion of Medicaid removed some of that need? If my memory is serving me correctly today, this has been on access to emergency services, has been on here for at least a few years, and that was pre the expansion of more people qualifying for Medicaid. So once again, I'm just saying that's an area that possibly to look at. And my third comment has to do with, back up to the five themes identified, the last one, establish shared outcomes. And my...
Sorry, Lars, where were you at? I'm sorry.
I was back to the other side.
Okay, I'm sorry. No, I lost where you were at. So.
Yeah, no. It says establish shared outcomes. And my concern, and I've expressed this before as we discussed various asset things, is first of all, we need to take a look at agencies that are not currently allowed in the asset process, because once the needs and a needs assessment is done and the analysis of the new quality of life, the SQALA, it may be very clear that some of the agencies that are being funded because you have to apply and be admitted or approved, that they're not providing a service with a need, or they're not providing it to the level that it needs to be done. And then that goes to shared areas, which is there may be a few areas where it's not going to be possible for the funders to have shared. I can't come up with it right off the top of my head, but that's a note that hit me, is that any time, right now we know that when the county can't fund, like mental health, sometimes our providers are turning to, instead, United Way, or maybe they can get it through the GSB budget, you know, or something like that. So we need to just be very cognizant that we don't end up into such a formula that some people aren't being funded, even though one entity needs this as a priority. Just those are my concerns about it as it goes back for discussion. One of the reasons I'm sharing this today is I have a doctor's appointment that took a long time to make, okay, that is during the asset meeting. Right now it's supposed to be very telehealth, so I'll try to show up to the meeting and then leave and talk to my doctor in the car and then come back. But there's a possibility I may not be able to attend the meeting, and so I...
It'll be on Zoom.
Okay, thank you. So, all right, mobile. But anyway, so those are my concerns as we move forward on this. And also I think it would be establishing these shared outcomes and priorities, as we discussed with the Volunteer Center, I think it's the clearest example, about we need to make sure that just because a program does not score well or isn't able to track well according to the United Way scorecard, that we're not eliminating, or there's an ability to look at alternate funding, you know, if they're being set up. So those are my shares.
I have a clarifying question, and I think it will probably go to Carla or maybe Sandra. Just kind of off of what you said with the shared outcome, wouldn't that be the reporting outcome so that they are consistent across all the agencies? That's how I interpret it.
I didn't take it.
I may be wrong, but that's where I would seek clarification of. I would think you wouldn't want to, if you're funded by three different entities, you don't want to have different.
Right.
You know, you'd be writing reports and writing reports.
Shared areas, not shared outcomes. You look at areas when you're talking.
Okay,
thanks.
So, thanks for that. Am I correct on that response, Sandra?
We specifically saw the shared outcomes or the shared funder priority.
Right. So I'm looking on the page 1,
mm-hmm.
where Laura brought up established shared outcomes. I recognize the comments that she made, but I said my interpretation of that is that across all agencies that if someone's funded, you've got the same outcomes that you want so that you're reporting.
Right.
You just have one report. Otherwise, you'd have, for each one, you'd be doing various different reports. Okay, so
I just didn't interpret that outcome.
It's easy to interpret different ways. I just wanted to make sure it was mine the way that I interpreted or whatever.
So the two things that you pointed out for potential narrowing on the county service priorities on the second page,
mm-hmm.
are this, do either of those volunteer input goes in as a vendor, does that keep you from supporting the recommendations?
No, it does not. It's just our areas where we've heard from the asset volunteers for the last 2 years at least about help. We need to find some way to narrow this down.
Sure.
There's so many services being applying for money as opposed to money available.
So do we need a motion?
I think we do. If there's no further discussion then, I would entertain a motion for approval of the asset joint funded priorities.
Right. So I move approval of the option one, approve the county priority and service priority areas as they are presented, and direct staff to convey the board's action to Asset Foundation at all for the continued work and development.
It's option one alternative. Are you referring to the staff recommendation?
Referring to the staff recommendation, it says options for consideration by the Board of Supervisors.
Are you looking at the...
I'm confused what you're looking at. The shared recommendation, because then there's alternative, that's one, and that's why I'm...
I'll take alternative one. You're right. I'm on the document, the original one, because that basically is...
So you want them to modify?
No. All right, let me find the right document. To me, when I read it...
about that.
All right, okay.
All right,
well,
let's do that. Approve the county priority and service priorities as they are presented and direct staff to convey the board's action to asset funder staff and volunteers for continued work and development towards shared funded priorities, which was item one on the one I was up.
Yeah, so.
Okay. Motion, is there a second?
That's your motion on there? I will second that motion.
Okay, further discussion? If none, Olson?
Aye.
Seddon?
Aye.
Merkin? Aye. Approved. And now we will go on to the next item, which is item 9, discussion and consideration of asset funding allocations. Again, Sandra and Carla.
They brought this to the board on May 1st, and if I remember correctly, that was another day we had that not came to Carla, and I sort of decided that it is the asset topic. I hope that's not the case. But
I hope not. Yeah.
Early in April, we had alerted the board to the challenges that the asset agency were having as a result of COVID-19. And as a result of that, the status of service delivery for many of those agencies had been altered. In the discussion with the board last Friday, it was best to get direction of how somebody would be handled with these agencies going forward to the end of the year. The general overview of feedback from the agencies, when we went to them and got feedback on the status of their operation, is attached. And we're basically just giving an overview of that that has been provided to you. Do you want me to go through each one? Do you have any specific questions about that feedback? Or how do you want to handle that?
What's the board's pleasure? Do you have any questions about the survey summary? Can we get just for a second to that question? You don't need to be there.
No, I don't have any questions. Thank you.
Okay.
Additional funds requested. Surprisingly, not many agencies have requested additional funds so far, and part of that, I believe, is because the asset team has been encouraging them to seek external funding. And so the longer that we waited to bring this forward, the more of them, the agency got external funding. Many of them were able to get PPP. Remember, the first round of PPP was exhausted very quickly, and some agencies' applications were in the pipeline. When that second round of funds came through, they were able to get that. And we're continuing to seek other opportunities. Laura, you bring up a volunteer center a lot. There are a couple of external funding opportunities I'd like to talk with them about, and some other agencies that don't necessarily fit in neat boxes when it comes to delivery of service. So we've really been trying to keep a keen eye out on that. And of course, that's going to reduce the burden on the county board's budget. No only is the county going to experience its own difficulties as related to COVID-19, but also there are going to be other small businesses and maybe other community agencies that are going to be looking for partnership support in this effort as we go forward. So the more we can reduce the burden on the board's budget, we certainly try to do that, but still try to assist agencies in getting that external funding. We brought forward a request for budget from ERP last time. The board approved that, but I think it's a moment to reflect that. And we got to the point where we were looking at the different options available for approving claims through the end of the fiscal year, as some of those agencies have modified their services or stopped. We wanted to get the board's approval to still allow them some flexibility to draw down dollars. If there was no change, then of course we would be looking to continue to bill as usual. What we've been doing. We did make some changes to the options we brought forward last Friday. I can read through this, or you can just look at it and see if you have any changes, whatever you want to do there.
And you got some, I think from all three of us, you got some, I think that you kind of synthesized into these 4 points.
Right.
Okay. Does anybody have any questions about those?
I do.
Okay,
Item 3,
mm-hmm.
All right, and it's talking about agencies who've modified services where they no longer meet the service definition, okay, as included in the county's fiscal year contract, which is a great addition, Lisa.
Thanks.
Allow the agencies to, and this is the part I'm questioning what our intent is, to draw down the remaining funds for the portion of their allocation for this service, which is needed to cover administrative or fixed costs. Draw down the remaining funds. Does that mean every dollar that they have left, or does that mean just the remaining funds that correspond to administrative costs? Because they could have, let's say, $6,000 in their account, right, or left to draw down for the last quarter. The services part of that really would have been to draw about $1,600 a month. I know these are low numbers, but right, leaving $400 a month for the administrative costs. So are we saying they can pull down the entire $2,000 and apply it to administrative costs, or do we need to clarify that it's only that portion, the $400, that can be pulled down every month? That's my question.
I would be saying that it was just the portion that was needed for administrative and fixed costs.
That was my understanding of part of the discussion that went last time.
Right.
However, it was important to make its intent known. We can leave it at that with the administrative or fixed costs and watch for that and only have those approved.
Okay.
Or if you're looking to add additional flexibility, they can add the complete amount down. If they have some left over, then number 4 would take care of that.
Right.
Before we're trying to do this roll with those additional dollars.
Right. Right. I just want to make sure that when we say draw down the remaining funds, okay,
sure.
I think that
was clear. What if you took after remaining funds where you've got 4?
Yeah.
What if you changed that word from? From 4 to from. Draw down the remaining funds from the portion of their allocation which is needed to cover.
Okay, yeah, that I think is clear.
All right.
Thank you for that. I could just see some conversations occurring.
Well, and the one question too, and Sandra and Carla, I don't know, this is Lisa, I don't know if you've inquired with some of those agencies, because I don't know that all of them within their budget, they separate out their administrative costs, because they don't bill separately for just administrative and the program.
Right.
So that's going to take some time for them to figure to figure that out.
Well, they've got a good question.
Right.
They can go back and do that.
It's typically a part of what they're billing. I think that's one of the things we tried to bring forward last Friday that we started approaching that.
Sure.
And we're not doing that, but we're looking at what they bill each month. Administrative costs are about a third of that.
Right.
Administrative costs are about a third of that.
and Lisa, you know, from it's funny that I opened, just grabbed the asked that book, opened it up, and I opened it up to Nami.
Yep.
You prepared this for these and stuff. So there are overall, they ask the agency for their expenses summary.
Sure.
You know, that does kind of show about how much of an overall percentage, you know, of the entire budget is for expenses, so they might be able to go ahead and pull some information
right.
for that to submit.
Right, yeah. And I'm just saying when they submit their, since you used that one, for
yeah.
example, when NAMI would submit their claims form, it doesn't separate out program and administrative.
Right.
It's all encompassed. So yes, they may be able to. I'm just pointing
yeah.
out that it may be a little bit more of a challenge for some to just know, just as a recognition
right.
of that.
That's what we dealt with the YSF
right.
because of that whole situation. There,
right.
I think, you know, they now are going to pay more attention. So that was about who's being screened at front desk, which is an overall cost, and who is actually getting a mental health service, which we couldn't pay for. Right?
Right.
That's
right.
It was on you.
Are there any other questions for Sandra or Carla? And let me just say, it appears to me that these four options go together, that none of them are mutually exclusive. It's not like we're shaped or accepting two and four or one and three or something. I think they all apply. That's what you're looking at
mm-hmm.
now, and I think that's clarified here, and I appreciate that. So if we have no other changes, I'm going to suggest that with the change that was noted in number three, which is changing the word four about in the middle of the whole thing from, that we I would entertain a motion to adopt options one through four, and also including the language that this is in response to the COVID-19 pandemic and to our public purpose.
I will make that motion that we approve the funding for those agencies as outlined in the or for asset funding allocations for those options one through four, including the one correction that was made from four to from, and to allow this in response to the COVID-19 pandemic and the impact it's had on the agencies involved. Oh yes, and to direct the staff to work with the agencies as a result of this motion.
I second.
Any further discussion?
No.
All in favor of the motion, please signify by saying aye.
No.
Roll call.
Roll call.
I move reading.
Hedden's aye.
Olson aye.
Thurgood aye. Pardon me.
Thanks, Sandra.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thanks,
Bill. Okay, we'll go on now, and are we going to sign up on information technology on any web-based tools? Barb, are you with us?
Yes, I am. Good morning, Board.
Good morning.
I submitted a spreadsheet just giving a brief overview, and there's a lot of information out there, but I just picked, you know, the four main venues that people are using. And of those, I think I'd like to focus on Zoom and WebEx and talk to you a little bit about those this morning. The four listed here meet all the criteria, but, and I've used three of them at least, and so there's no difficulty from the participant's point of view. I think what we need to look at is the person running the meeting. We want to make it as easy as possible. So I checked around with about 15 of the surrounding counties, and many of them are using Zoom. A few use WebEx, and one uses GoToMeeting. Now, originally, I wasn't a fan of Zoom because there were several issues when the use started picking up due to the pandemic, including a lot of lagging and what was called Zoom bombing. However, I'm very impressed with the way the company responded to these issues and were able to remedy them. So what I like about Zoom is it's more intuitive and it allows for better mobility, for instance, if you have multiple monitors. with WebEx, it shares everything that the host has. So if you have multiple monitors and have things you don't want the participants to see, it's too bad because it shares both monitors. But with Zoom, you can control that a little better. And it also allows you to see what hardware the participants are using, which might help us with this clicking dilemma that we're having. So with Zoom, there is a portal that comes with it. And like if someone from the boardroom initiates a meeting, IT could still log into the portal and resolve issues remotely, which, you know, such as what I couldn't do this morning with the muting issue. What you would need for a web-based meeting is a webcam, at least for the board. You can dial into web-based meetings with just the phone. And webcams are built into most of the laptops. We looked at purchasing additional webcams, and they're about $100 each for a good one, and the lead time is between 7 and 14 days. For a while, you couldn't get them at all. Now we are able to get them at least within 2 weeks. And then the only other issue I see, for instance, if someone was in the boardroom running the meeting from the presenter laptop, if we had someone in that physically wanted to present, we would have to know ahead of time so that we could install a second device for those presentations. Do you have any questions?
This is Supervisor Olson, and here's my first concern, and it actually came up when Sandra told me that the asset joint funders meeting was going to be Zoom, and I just talked about me, I had thought I would be there personally, so I said I'll go out to my car, right, and call in. And then I realized, okay, I'd be doing that on a mobile. So in general, though, Zoom doesn't allow mobile access, so that kind of ties down people, especially if people are calling me in to ask us a question.
I think you can call in. I think what it is like Zoom, I cannot pull up on my mobile phone or my iPad because it takes a different browser.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And you cannot
call in to be those Zoom meetings.
Okay,
you can't use those browsers.
Yeah, you can't use those browsers.
Right.
Thank you for that.
Right. Right. The participants.
Can I
just
ask quickly? Somebody just put us on hold. Could you please mute yourself?
I just want to say, if you download the app, you can use them on mobile phone.
Thank you. I wondered about that.
You just can't get it through your internet.
Yeah. It is our, I believe it is the Story County, well, at least that's our on-hold music for Story County, so maybe it's a Story County user. But the clicking is still there.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you.
So what the thing about Zoom was, you cannot initiate a meeting from an Android. I think that was the issue. You can still call into it from a mobile.
Well,
you just could not initiate it. And like Lisa said, some of the browsers don't work very well.
Right, but as Ted just said, you can download the app and use it. But
right.
You have to have the app
exactly.
To be able to do it.
And my iPhone will allow me to start a meeting right now if anybody
would. Good. So there's a lot of different plans that they offer. I guess what I'm suggesting is the business plan, because there was some suggestion that at one point we could have over 200 participants in a meeting.
Possibly.
So the business plan for Zoom allows 300 participants.
And on the pro plan, he said 24 hours. What does the 24 hours mean?
That means that a call... Who just joined that had us on hold? We can hear your on hold music. I just wanted to point that out. So the 24 hours means that a call could last up to 24 hours.
Oh.
After 24 hours, it's a new day, so it cuts you off.
Okay, I thought you just meant 24 hours. You only had 24 hours of something. Time. Okay.
No, that is the call duration would be up to.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, let's hope we never have one that lasts 24 hours.
Yeah, let's hope that. So I guess the business plan, which would be $19.99 for up to 300 participants, I think that's the one I would suggest for us. Now, as I kept looking at the Zoom site and some of the other sites, they are offering COVID discounts, so the $19.99 could be less. I think the pro plan was $13.50 or something like that, so they offered about $1.50 off. Unfortunately, they only accept payment via credit card, so this is something that we'd have to work out to make sure that it was credited correctly. But other than that, I guess I would recommend Zoom. I think they've done a good job of bringing themselves up to speed and correcting the Zoom bombing issues and the lag. Now, the last couple Zoom meetings I've been on, there was no lag, so I was impressed with that.
Go ahead, Mark.
I was going to ask. So, Mark, could we quickly walk through logistically what that would look like? So you have your three supervisors and our clerk. We're in the boardroom, so that's one webcam that could just kind of broadly show us all. But if we individually want to look at the speakers as they're talking, do we need to also all have called into Zoom so that we can see who's talking? All right.
The person that's running the meeting can Zoom in on, I would assume we would start with Linda as the background since she's officiating the meeting. And then as the different people speak, they can be brought into the main screen or they can be shown across the top of the screen speaking.
The person that is running the meeting would be the chair of the meeting, whether it be Supervisor Merkin in this meeting or Board of Health, John Cashin. We don't want to run the meeting. We're going to need assistance.
I think she means chairing the meeting. I don't think she means running the software.
Yes, I meant chairing. Sorry.
I know, but somebody to run the software? I mean, we're interested in having a person who I guess is sitting now would be sitting over in where normally the speaker, where our guests present and staff present from, so that we'd be looking at the big screen, but we still want another person there. And that is possible, right?
Yeah, we're working on that.
Yes, that's what I mentioned when, so the person in my mind would be sitting at the presenter desk. And
okay.
Then running the meeting from that laptop so that if we did have somebody that wanted to come in person and do a presentation, we would have to know ahead of time so we could install a second device for them to use so that the person could run the meeting and also have the presenter there. If they wanted to show up in person, maybe they don't want to.
And it may be that if Zoom would really work for us, that would take place of some of the other things that we're doing and would want a permanent second. Lucy did it last year.
Yes.
That presentation for the bond.
Yeah.
The first one was done right there. It was on the screen, so it works great.
Mm-hmm. So would an IT person, then you mentioned an IT person could also be monitor each meeting to troubleshoot remotely. Could we combine them?
Yes, there's a portal that is offered.
Yeah, in the background, but I sent an email in preparation for this to see if there's somebody from the board's office that could sit there. I did reach out to Leanne, the CSC communications manager, to possibly do that. Once it's all set up and we're working full time, we can have somebody from the board's office possibly moderating the meeting if that works.
Well, my thought
not
is...
Not an IT person, but somebody else. IT would troubleshoot the issues that we have, but we could have somebody sitting there actually, you know, allowing people to speak. I mean, it's a software thing.
Yeah, it's hard to chair a meeting if it's a large meeting.
Yep.
And also be looking at,
Right. So we would have somebody other than IT.
Yeah. So in the 3+ years I've been here, okay, and we've been video, we've had to rotate several people, and they're only just turning on a camera and turning off a camera, okay? Now we're talking about that we'd have to have multiple people trained. So you're talking about that, and that really came to mind with the interns, so they're not here at times or whatever. So there would need to be somebody who would be trained and a backup trained also.
The interns are working. We typically have to work full time during the summer, so once we get back. And also ask standards and see if there's, if it's Darla to do it, if she's in the office, or somebody else be a backup. When our meetings go 3 to 4 or 5 hours long, I don't know if I can use the right person to moderate the meeting, try to modify the case or other. Insurance reps tell me that they have to deal with.
kind of a high-priced,
we were trying to brainstorm and see what we could do. And there's a lot of things that are going on for us. I mean, we've got to be thinking about, serving the information that we're being presented, not if somebody on, posted a chat that we need to.
Right.
Exactly.
So,
yeah. That's hard to keep track of everything.
Yeah.
So I'd like to point out the Ames one, too. It's one of the assistant city managers that's doing it, right? Brian Phillips.
So we've had some options. I don't think it's a lot.
He's already there for meetings. So.
Yeah.
And so he's already there. So why don't we, my sense would be let Alyssa explore that further and thank you.
We'll have you back. We don't just want more person.
We'd be happy to train whoever needs to do it. Have more than one person who understands it and is able to use it and just doesn't use it once a year. I mean, the training would have to be more frequent than that.
Okay. Any other questions for Barb about this?
None.
I think we've all been involved in Zoom meetings and they seem to be fairly, I'm just saying, it's fairly transparent platforms used, and
So is there a motion to accept to accept an option here?
I would move that we accept Zoom based upon staff's recommendation and staff to work out the details.
Is that a business plan?
Oh, business plan.
Second. Any further discussion? Olson?
Aye.
Cousins?
Aye.
Merkin? Aye. Okay, I want to thank Barb and Alyssa for working so quickly on that. And got this information in a couple days. And we appreciate it and look forward to it. Next.
Thanks, Board.
Thank you. Next, we will go to Todd and on the face covering policy.
Yes. Good morning, Board.
Hi.
So we're looking moving forward.
Can you speak up just a little bit more?
My mouth is as close to the speaker as I can get.
Okay. I just put your volume all the way up, and I had it down a little bit because of the knocking. You're on the side of the now.
Okay. So we are policies together to get us back to the reopening to be ready for that. And one of those new policies is face covering per the CDC's recommendation. So I presented that to you all to look over and let us have any discussion about. And as you know, we did that with the CTMT on Wednesday, and we've made some edits. Have gotten that all put together and bring it to you. So,
are you able to tell us just quickly what the edits were since we talked about this on Wednesday?
It was to help clarify a few things about when is the face covering needed and where is it needed. That was the main function of it. And then a small. What to do after removing the mask, that hand sanitizer was considered okay if soap and water is not available.
So, Board, do you have any questions? I think we're all looking very quickly at one word where the face covering. Yeah. It read okay when I read it this morning, but I wasn't looking for the change.
Sure. Well, there's several wording changes, and then I bolded a few areas to help, to see that each section is a little different and what it pertains to in each paragraph. Just kind of help break that up so it doesn't read just like a regular sheet. You can look at specific areas. So.
Yep, that's helpful. Any questions, Lisa?
No, I guess kind of. I like our general policy statement on there. Do we need to have anything in here saying that this would be that this would end if the governor makes any changes, or do we not need any of that particular language?
We can just then rescind the policy.
Yeah. That, okay.
When we feel it's appropriate.
When we feel that's fine. Okay.
Good question.
This is Larson. I just would like to make sure that, you know, what if approving today that we get a proofread done on this for uniformity of style, for presentation of like linear 6 feet. We are implementing that will be, there's some commas. So I know you guys, when you had a very quick turnaround time to prove it, and I brought this up on Wednesday, so you focused on the changes of the substantial changes, but we certainly would like our final policy that we are going to put on the books to have those corrections made. But I have no questions about this. I think it runs much clearer.
I guess I do have one other question, if I may. This would probably go to Alyssa. So, Alyssa, would this be, if this were approved, be implemented then today, Monday, or whatever? My question is, does everybody have a mask? And so is it dependent on everybody having a mask? And that's what I just want the clarification on.
The more people get at the data they want, the mask. I did place an order for 200 masks. She corrected herself. I might have. At first, she said she got 100 done by Monday. My understanding is a lot of smart clearings have a lot of masks. The people that are already working in the workplace, you know, they, whether their department has not had somebody fill them, or the employees themselves, it does get the employees wear their own masks.
So, okay.
So, I mean, if the board wants to implement it immediately, I do remember that for county elected office holders, they have to adopt this policy also.
So, what if we were to give a week's notice?
You could make it effective if we made a key server to make.
Well, then you got. I mean, then you do have a week of people not. That's why I was just trying to kind of like, okay,
yeah.
Kind of that question, the opener, ask that question or not, is that you want to have it, but I don't want to penalize somebody if they don't have any kind of face covering if we're saying that it's provided. You did point out that we do state in here they could wear their own, and maybe that would be something that you'd encourage them until they get a... county provided one.
Voluntarily wearing face covering now is trying to say, I'm not going to do it after 15.
No, the question who are not about those people who are not voluntarily wearing, is it because they don't have one? You know, we have if our numbers are continuing to rise, and the purpose is to keep the other person safe, right, to keep our other employees safe. I don't see where holding off a week is meeting the real goal here.
Well, we're just saying we don't have them now if somebody doesn't have them.
Okay.
And you're thinking, she said Monday, but I thought, oh, give it a week because then that lets the list get on that gets into the distribution process, how many people
you need. You could make the motion that the policy becomes effective to the county and secure policy firm.
So
or you could
define
it.
All. For people who are working here now, people working part-time. So let's, if we can go back, you took a poll, correct? And that's how you got the 200 number.
Well, and that includes
so, well, and some are for everyone to have two. That 200 would be to have everybody have two. So maybe we don't need to have a motion to do anything because people may already have theirs. It was just, I guess I was thinking out loud on that to make sure that...
If you approve this today, I will send it out and say those departments that do not know the policy.
You stop them first.
Yeah.
Sure, you're coming to mind.
So, I guess I just wanted to say that I'm not sure that each
I think one, it's not an onerous to have employees have their own mask, but with requiring that they're laundered every day,
mm-hmm.
having to require an employee to get two or three masks, and everybody keeps that rotation or two or three to launder
clarification, forget. I do
it
every night, but yes,
I'm never there. Then I have a question for Elizabeth. For each elected official to adopt the policy, that's just to communicate to staff. There's no official.
We'll have acknowledgement for this policy to your staff. If your staff wants to make acknowledgement, then we know that we are ready.
Okay. I'd like to make it effective Monday or Tuesday.
Yeah, I would be fine. I was just opening up to make sure that we have something to that they're encouraged to wear their mask, and that one will be provided as soon as the county will be providing additional ones or whatever.
So this is a policy. So then you just said encouraging. Shelly's got her hand up.
I'm really sorry, but we eat in the break room, and you're saying that we have to have masks in the break room.
It's in here.
No.
Not when you're eating.
When not.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah. That's noted in the policy. All right.
So cannot figure out how to do that yet.
Yep.
So if you go, what's up?
We are scheduled to have those disposable masks that we are going to have available to the public delivered today. So it's potentially that we could have some of the disposable ones that we can limit out on their face out today.
And they can be used more than once.
So like if this goes into effect and the employees have to use it, want to come into the workplace and don't have a mask to wear, potentially we could offer those to them and help with the washable ones, order to fill, just throwing that out there.
So Target has had a huge bin of disposable ones also. They were $3 a piece, so they were a little pricey, but they could be done wearing once. They were sold in packs of five. I bought one. Maybe we should, if we could get it run, or, you know, I'll stop and get them.
Sorry, he's got some already.
He said they're due to be
due
here. They're
delivery.
Not here.
Not
yes.
Here as
I mean,
of, like, come up here.
Yeah. So we're back to, if we're making a mandatory policy, effective Monday, we're going to have to make sure we've got something to provide to everybody who
well,
comes
that's
forward,
where they
right?
can wear their own. It does say that they can wear their own. So
that's what I was talking about.
Yeah.
If somebody shows up and says, I don't have any.
Then
we'll get them one.
We'll get them something at that particular
time.
If
we don't have, I think we can be reasonable enough that if we don't have one, to give them a say, okay, we'll let you know when we have one yet. We're not going to see one. We're not going to be rigid about that if they don't have one.
And I know Kurt bought bandanas. I mean, you know, we
yeah.
could do that.
They can wear bandanas too. They can
make
a
face, whatever.
What types can they go to the teachers to make a temporary mask? So, okay. So should the effective date then be 5/11? Is that what we're talking about?
Yeah,
which would be Monday, yes.
Yeah. Yeah, and it says 5/8, so I'll change it on the copy of 5/8.
I think the approval date would be today because that's a board meeting.
Yeah, there's an effective date on there as well.
Oh, so effective date.
I'm changing the effective date 5/11, presuming that's what the motion is going to be.
I will make a motion. I move that we approve the face covering policy in response to the COVID-19 pandemic with an effective date of May 11, 2020.
Second.
Any further discussion? Olson?
Aye.
Seven.
Aye.
Morgan? Aye. It is approved. Thank you, Tom. Thank you, Elizabeth. Thank you, Joey. Everybody who's worked on this. This is very good. Now we can go on to reopening guidelines. Again, five, you're up.
Yes, Board. So along with the face covering, we wanted some guidelines out there for everyone, for the employees, and how we're going to the public. What are some of the requirements around that? And we presented the CCMC on Wednesday. Number 7 and number 16 were asked to have some definition put around them. So those are the ones we corrected to get some further definition around. And other than that, I think it was acceptable to everybody in the CCMC, so we're presenting it to you as the board.
Okay.
Thank you. There should be a discussion on both these items Wednesday. I think that was helpful in getting something to do up as a vet is just to, you know, fire. But, so, Board, do you have any questions about the reopening guidance document?
I do not.
I do not. Just the comment once again is that these are guides that will be determined on with either your elected official or and or HR if there are questions. Okay, so these are not set in stone because for like the Board of Supervisors, you know, you want to talk to your either Director of Internal or Director of External Operations, and they'll bring their questions to the Board of Supervisors for determination on the call. So just because it's written here isn't how it will end up necessarily being carried out. Ditto for the Sheriff's Department, ditto for treasurers and if at all. Okay.
You're just referring to elected officials.
Yes, I'm just referring to elected officials, but so I don't, you know, if somebody is working for, you know, department and they look at that and says, well, it says right here, no, the elected officials will still make the final determination. Yes, we're in.
So we have a motion.
I haven't made a motion yet. I'll make the motion that we approve the reopening guidance for county offices. As it relates to the COVID-19 pandemic.
Would you entertain a friendly amendment that says we approve the reopening guidance document so that we clear that it's kind of a document?
Sure. I'll accept that.
Okay. I'll second with that.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded that we approve the reopening guidance document. Any further discussion? If not, Desmond?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Martin?
Aye.
Motion carries. Are there other items? Okay, let's look like it. So we've got a public comment number one. This comment period is for the public to address topics on today's agenda. Does anybody have any comments that they would like to make?
There is no one who has texted.
Okay, is there anybody on the phone? Okay, hearing none, I will close the public comment session. And item 15 is a closed session pursuant to Iowa Code Section 21.5 to evaluate the professional competency of individuals and independent hiring performance discharge being considered when necessary to prevent loss and irreparable injury to that individual's reputation. And the individual requests a closed session. We have had requests for a closed session. So I would entertain a motion for the Board to run a closed session.
I was so moved.
Second.
Okay, discussion. Olson?
Aye.
Hedden?
Aye.
Merkin? Aye. Okay, we will.